Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever games, movies, and TV is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. Welcome to Roguecast, episode 227. And we have a ton of news. For some reason. We don't know why.
Yeah, is it San Diego this week? It feels like
a convention hit based on the amount of news.
So we're going to try and burn through. We're also starting late. So we're going to try and burn through a bunch of stuff. It's also a big comics week.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a jam-packed episode in which we try to rush through a bunch of stuff.
For once, we won't be big mouths about every single news piece and take 20 minutes on each one.
Do you really think that's true?
No. But but I wanted to say the words and see what they sounded like.
But if people want to experience this at a faster rate, they could just bump up the speed of the podcast.
I assume everybody did that.
Yeah, play 1.5.
They're like, move it up to...
Does anyone do that?
Lots of people do.
My wife listens to podcasts like that.
How? It messes with my ears so much.
Don't you? You'll just acclimate and you assume that people are chipmunks in the real world?
That's just dumb.
Yeah, I can't do it. I didn't even know why that thing existed. And then I started hearing about occasionally people I knew who would listen to it at that heightened speed. And it sort of makes some sense because, you know, podcast people can drone on and on and be slow. And, you know, that kind of like just speeds it up. It's not like it's a visual medium. It's not like they're usually... I definitely couldn't do it with a story podcast.
I was going to say, can you imagine like a horror story podcast and done like, in like 1.5?
I can imagine a political podcast or something
well,
like that.
That makes it more funny.
but yes, it is insane, though. It's a crazy thing, but people can do it if they want.
All right, so first tangent over. That went well.
That was only like a minute and a half. We're fine.
Not our usual 20.
All right, so the only story news to mention right now is that our Magic the Gathering pre-release is this weekend. And make sure and come in for that if you get a chance.
Yep.
Saturday and Sundays.
Yep.
I believe we still have space for both right now. News. Okay, so there's a ton of Marvel news. Most of it TV related or movie related. So... and all of it kind of rumory.
Mm-hmm.
So Loki and Scarlet Witch, they were going to do this anthology series on Disney streaming that is going to be like Loki and Scarlet Witch to the character's name, but it's going to be other characters from the MCU with the characters from the movies, the actual movies playing them. Kevin Feige in charge of the whole thing.
Yep. Yeah, it seems like whereas they've kind of had a more distinct line generally between their TV stuff and the movies, this is a blurring of it that also includes serious characters.
I think this is really interesting. I've seen think pieces on both sides of people talking about how this is going to be great. I've seen people talking about how this makes the movies less special. What do you guys think?
Here's a quick question. Let me just quick ask something. S.H.I.E.L.D. had who? What movie character showed up in the TV show
Coulson.
S.H.I.E.L.D.? But no,
and then there was a guest star with Nick Fury.
Yeah.
And there was a guest episode with Sif.
Yeah.
No, never the main
character.
I wasn't sure how close they had gotten to
Fury
this before.
Fury is the biggest one.
Fury was the biggest one they got, and he was in it for like 10 minutes.
I have to be honest, I'm not particularly interested.
I kind of am, because I think serial storytelling means that TV is a perfect medium for comic book stories, especially if you do smaller stories. Like, if you're going to do a story about Scarlet Witch and her, like, what her life is like and that kind of thing, or if we're going to see what Loki was like in his younger days, like, I'm interested in seeing something like that.
Any of that sounds interesting to me, and I think
we don't know when the time they're going to be slotting the times.
No. I would assume they'll be pre-Infinity War, but this all may come out after Avengers 4 anyway. So.
True. What were we saying, Nick?
No, I'm definitely interested. I mean, if you get Tom Hiddleston and Elizabeth Olsen involved in it, and if Feige running it, and. I want expansion of the MCU, and I feel like this is an interesting medium for it to take.
But they've done expansions of the MCU before.
But they haven't.
This one is just
a bigger one.
Because here's the key difference.
Yeah.
All the Marvel TV, from Netflix on to ABC, has been done under the auspices of Jeff Loeb.
Yeah.
This is Kevin Feige.
He does have the track
record. Loeb is
specifically not involved. And that is what makes me interested.
So, yeah, they could... You know, this could be a game changer for what that is.
This is like a 6-hour-long movie focused on Scarlet Witch.
Here's the thing. I do like those characters, but it is still, you know, like, the movies are so good at what they do.
Yeah.
I suppose I'm a little bit nervous about, like, do I want 6 hours of the Scarlet Witch? That is a different vibe than what they do. They don't get into characters at that level. It is kind of more of a slightly more pop experience. I think she's one of the most interesting characters in the movies. I think Tom Hiddleston is like the best villain that they've had.
And unfortunately, neither of them get the screen time in a movie that they're going to get in a TV show.
But I still don't know if they either of them deserve a 6-hour miniseries.
But Dave, let me see this. If it was Vision and Scarlet Witch, you'd be right on board, right?
No. Really? Okay. I'd be about the same spot.
Because they're not going to do that story in the movies, but they could do it.
Well, here's the thing. I think everyone sitting at this table, Dave is probably... He's a fan of the MCU, but I don't think he's like the mega fan.
He's not a super fan, yeah.
He's not a super fan that Randy and I are.
He's not
the
one who buys them.
Although Randy loves the MCU like insanely more than I do.
It's at like watch list levels.
The MCU is it's like my third child.
Yes. And definitely the best of them, right?
Oh, you can still listen to this podcast. Sure, why not?
You can be truthful.
I'm all for it. I think this. I was gonna pay for the Disney streaming service already because of the Star Wars.
And I was already gonna not pay for it.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I never even considered getting the DC streaming. It's just there's not enough on there that tempts me. I keep seeing the ads for Titans, and I'm like, I don't care enough. Even Batman Animated Remastered. But Marvel, the Disney one, yeah, I'll be there first day. If nothing else, to have all the Disney movies. Like, that content will bring me in. And they're
going to, like,
so much.
Do you
want to
buy
content.
A yearly thing? And yeah. Randy will be like, yeah.
Yep. Sign me up. Here's something I'm less interested in, and I want to be excited for it. Alan Heinberg, who has written some really good, wrote Young Avengers, wrote the Wonder Woman movie, is developing an unnamed female superhero for Marvel for ABC. I would like to be excited about this, but ABC does not get
like,
good superheroes.
It's a female group hero team.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I feel like it's
a Charlie, for lack of a better word, a Charlie's Angels.
Yeah, something
thing.
Along those lines. And they haven't said which heroes it is. I would assume not like...
But it is going to be pre-existing characters, not
I
original
think that
characters.
Is what yes, I've heard.
But it's going to be yet another one of their side projects that's the dismissive TV stuff, right? Or is this going to be...
Well, that's the thing. It's on ABC.
So
Jeff
it would
will be involved.
Yeah.
And so Heinberg's good. Heinberg wrote for, like, the OC. He's a TV writer.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to know how to write for TV. But, man, Agent Carter was good, but deeply flawed.
Yep.
And, like, if that's the best we can hope for, I don't know if I want it.
The, what do you think it might be like? The, what was the all-female team?
Oh, like A-Force?
And there's isn't there another one,
there's
too?
A few, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, here's the best-case scenario. Like, She-Hulk, Hellcat, Spider-Woman. Something like that. Like a law firm, detective firm kind of thing.
Right.
You could do that, and you could do it on the right budget. But I don't think that's what they're going to do.
Yeah. You know, it's too bad Misty Knight is caught up in the Netflix stuff, because a version of her... Heroes for Hire comic that they did a few years ago that was so good would be awesome.
We could finally get Paladin on TV.
Yep. Yeah, I'd like to see her in charge. You could have, like, kind of, in a way, what they did with Birds of Prey, where the core group is female, but they're, you know... multi-gender agents there.
I love the idea. I would like to be excited about this. I just, ABC has dropped the ball really badly with S.H.I.E.L.D., really, really badly with Inhumans.
Yep.
And Agent Carter, while I liked it,
I'm actually a little surprised that they're pulling a trigger on another Marvel show.
I am too. I thought they would have given up.
Yeah. But maybe Alan Heinberg, with the success with Wonder Woman, came up with a great idea, and they're kind of jumping on it.
Right.
The ABC shows do kind of feel like Netflix light.
Disney CEO has confirmed that Kevin Feige will be in charge of the X-Men.
Yep.
This is super big news. I think, Dave, this is more exciting to you than any other MCU news.
Yeah, probably so. I'm probably a bigger supporter, I think, than anybody I know with some acknowledgments of flaws of the X-Men movies that were existed.
Sure.
The Bryan Singer stuff.
You mean the extant movies?
The extant X-Men movies, yes.
Even that X3 movie?
Even X3 is if just falls in this side of passable. I will take it over most of the Wolverine fare.
I'll reverse that. I will take over all the Wolverine fare.
Fair enough. But that the first class movies and stuff like that kind of brought the series back, and they generally done a good job with them. I think X-Men, because they were sort of a subversive underground team, they were able to work it without all the costumes and stuff like that and make it work within its own terms.
Yeah.
But the possibility of doing them in the Marvel style is exciting.
It is.
They already have a cosmic universe. We've talked about this before. If they want to at some point pull off the Dark Phoenix story and
they
do it right...
They need that.
Then they have... It would be easy... You just drop the Shi'ar in wherever.
Yeah.
But also, they can do the costumes. They can... And here's the thing. I think they're going to do the unexpected. Yeah. I think that, like, the Spider-Man movie dropped the traditional mythology and tropes that we expect. Mm-hmm. Uncle Ben, the burglar, wrestling, all of that stuff, and just found a complete new story to tell. I suspect they will do that with X-Men, too.
I think you're right.
I think so.
And I think that's the right way to go, and I wouldn't want, honestly, a recreation of it. So, I'm pretty hyped for it.
Yeah,
I don't know how this is going to work in conjunction with Fox dropping their final X-Men movie.
I don't think it's going to happen.
You think they're going to...
I think it's going to get shelved. I think Disney has the money to make to basically pay off.
It is crazy to think of, like, a movie starring... Jennifer Lawrence?
Which she'd be
one of the big
players. She's, like, the headliner.
Getting sidelined.
Yeah. I think they shelve it and it gets released direct to video at some point or put on their streaming service or something like that.
Now they essentially Marvel bought back the rights. Is that essentially how it works?
It's a weird thing. It's a merger thing.
Like, does Fox still have input on the movies at all?
No,
I don't think so.
No,
is there anything in it for them other than it was probably maybe part of the agreement to not release the movie? Like, why not just make some bucks even if it flops?
Because it undercuts them bringing the X-Men in. Anything out there that's an X-Men movie is going to undercut what they're doing with it.
But isn't that Marvel bringing it in and not?
But it's Fox. Marvel has the rights to say.
Oh, they do. They just straight up own.
Yeah, they
Fox?
Straight up. They
okay.
Own.
In that case, I fully get why they would shelve it.
Yeah.
And I think they should shelve it.
I agree. I think that universe does not need an ending. It had several endings, and they've all been terrible.
If they can shelve the New Mutants and come out with an actual New Mutants,
honestly, the ending that'd be perfect. If it was like the second X-Men movie in the Marvel Universe, or the third one was to show the next generation like that.
Yeah.
I will say this: the Days of Future Past, where you saw the timeline restored at the end of it.
Yeah.
I would say that could work as a good ending to it.
X-Men Apocalypse, not so.
Everything they built will fall.
And it fell hard.
Yeah. Oscar Isaac as the villain, and that's what they did with it.
Yeah, that's pitiful.
Nick, you down for some Marvel Universe X-Men?
Yeah, I mean, that's a no-brainer for me.
Kevin Feige in charge of it, I feel like has to be a win-win situation.
I want a badass Cyclops on the screen.
I think that's my biggest hope is simply, it doesn't even have to be Cyclops, it just has to not be Wolverine.
Yeah.
I don't care if the point of view character is Banshee, man.
Well, that would make me scream.
Yeah.
Scream! Yes.
That's Nick's happy Banshee scream.
That is my happy Banshee scream.
What else we got?
All right. So, yeah, we could, by the way, speculate on what they could do with the X-Men for a long time.
It's true.
Scoot ahead, because busy week. The Eternals has writers and directors. Yeah. This is one of those things, like, if this were DC, I'd be like, why are they doing this? But Marvel Cinematic has a lot of faith for me.
Soon, Randy and I will be the biggest fans of Ajax.
Nobody cares about the Eternals.
Icarus, yeah. Ajax.
The Eternals are the pretty people versus the deviants, the monstrous deviants, both created by the Celestials. It's a Kirby thing. It talks about him being influenced by Chariot of the Gods. It's a weird alien god thing. It feels like Fourth World also ran stuff.
Almost any Kirby project, and I'm talking up even up to Devil Dinosaur, I kind of like more than the Eternals.
Yeah, I would rather see Devil Dinosaur than this. I would definitely rather see, anything
what
else.
What it does, though, like, if you kind of look at what they did with Guardians of the Galaxy and some of their other sci-fi properties, is it opens the way up for some new superheroes who would kind of surprise us. They'd be new interpretations anyway, but essentially modern Greek god hero types in space. That easily mixes and matches with, like, Thor stuff, Guardians of the Galaxy stuff.
I was gonna say, they've already used the Celestials, and why not just mine off of that?
But the enthusiasm, I'm not gonna be able to, like, work up enthusiasm, I think, until I see a trailer.
So here's the interesting thing about this. The screenplay is by a pair of writers, Matthew and Ryan Firpo, who did, you guys familiar with The Blacklist? The, like, hot unproduced scripts that go around in Hollywood?
Yeah, yeah.
So they have one called Ruin, which is a premise of, after World War II, a former SS captain and a Jewish woman travel through war-torn Germany to find and kill a Nazi officer. Apparently, Gal Gadot is rumored to have signed on to it, but that was, like, this is, like, their script. And the director is Chloe Zhao, which is interesting because she will be the first Chinese-American woman to be directing a Marvel movie.
Oh, interesting.
And also, what you said about the Guardians, Dave, if if she brings sort of an Eastern mythology vibe to the Eternals...
Yeah, that would be interesting.
And it's like, you know, the gods coming down to Earth and that kind of thing. Like, that could be a much more interesting take on the Eternals.
Yeah. I'm willing for them to kind of be very loose in their interpretation of the comics.
Well, and that's the big upside of the Eternals is no one... Okay, not no one. Very few people care about the Eternals.
Yeah, somewhere there's a hand being raised.
You can do literally anything.
I mean, Neil Gaiman might have a fondness for
them. Yeah, certain creators, I think, who were of a certain age, they grew up with them in the 70s, have some fondness for it. I doubt there's very many people beyond that.
But the thing is, like, there's no sacred cows. They can do whatever they want with
right,
the property.
Right, and should.
Yes. All right. Moving on from Marvel news to movie news. Kingsman 3 has been announced.
Yay!
I saw 2. It's okay.
I like Matthew Vaughn. I was happy that he is involved and everyone else is. I like that. And if it's a trilogy, then that's perfect.
I am okay with it. And Dave doesn't care.
How about a quadrilogy?
Sure.
Michael G. Borden is playing Clark in Rainbow Six movies.
I think he should play Clark Griswold in a remake of the Vacation movies.
I've watched that too.
So John Clark in Tom Clancy's stuff is like one of his big guys.
Yeah,
is he a special ops dude?
Yeah,
yeah.
Who goes mercenary? Right.
Who goes mercenary in the Without Remorse or something?
Yeah,
the ultimate right wing fantasy novel.
And then he becomes the head of this international special ops unit.
Right. He heads up Rainbow Six.
Rainbow Six is because it's a rainbow of countries.
Yes.
And there are six of them.
I think there are six main.
There are five
units.
Foxes.
Yes.
There are foxes. There are a bunch of foxes. There are five of them.
I see you're doing a Tarantino thing.
Yes, I am.
Which I thought you were doing some weird Zootopia thing.
Yes, they're all foxes.
Which I guess we've seen that a Tom Clancy show can work nowadays because
Amazon.
Well,
this is movies.
And these are movies.
Now, John Clark, I think of, like in my head, aside from the fact that he's generally been cast as a white dude, but more of the fact, I think of him as a slightly older dude than Michael B. Jordan.
Sorry, we ruined it forever.
It's going to be forever stuck as Michael G. Borden.
Michael G. Borden.
But anyway, I think of him as a somewhat older dude. But like, he obviously wasn't always, and it depends on what part of the life they want to show. Yeah. So,
and also, I mean, Willem Dafoe played him great in Clear and Present Danger, and I like that version of him. But Michael B. Jordan destroyed it forever, Dad. He played like an ex-Black Op guy very well in Black Panther.
Yeah,
I can see him bringing that sort of that level to it. I think this would be great.
So you said movie series?
Movie series.
Anybody else attached other than him?
Not yet.
Okay. I'd be down for that. I don't know what the timeline is and like how many books this guy got, but like his rogue, you know, gone rogue, fighting drug dealers or whatever thing. And was that after Rainbow Six? Before Rainbow Six?
I don't remember.
I think that book came out in like the 80s and Rainbow Six was like in the 90s.
Yeah.
So that's probably like. I guess he goes rogue and then he comes back.
I think he repurposed him.
Yeah.
Well, he went rogue from the U.S. military, but Rainbow Six is like a U.N. military thing.
Right. You know how it is when you're an action hero. You go rogue about every 5 minutes.
Yep, pretty much.
I'm down for it.
The last time we talked about the new Bond movie, we were talking about how Danny Boyle is no longer doing it.
Yep.
Instead, they've got Kerry Joji Fukunaga, and that's a trade-up. I know that we all like Danny Boyle.
Yep.
Yeah.
But Kerry Fukunaga is fantastic. He's doing that show Maniac on HBO or Netflix. He did True Detective for HBO. He is a fantastic director.
Now, is this going
How
to
do
be
you think
a trippiest of Bonds that we've ever seen?
Well, that's the thing.
I was going to say, what do his sensibilities mean for Bond?
Now, True Detective, he does kind of gritty, and he does kind of... What's weird is that he has different sensibilities. Like, Maniac is very 70s Cronenberg, Wes Anderson... strangeness, and True Detective was straight up sort of gritty noir.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got different styles. Whatever the case, it'll be beautiful to look at. He's amazing at setting scenes.
Bond, definitely started out at, like, comparatively, Casino Royale and the more recent Bonds have been grittier, but they still have a certain, definitely a pop element. You can go grittier with them, but maybe who knows if that's actually going to be his direction.
Well, here's a notable thing. In True Detective, in I think episode 3 or 4, he did a long uncut take.
Yeah.
Where it was like they were chasing a protagonist through a neighborhood, and there was like a gunfight and all this stuff, and a chase scene.
Pretty intense.
And it was amazing.
Yeah.
And so this guy has some serious chops.
Right. I do like the idea of a Bond movie. If he could do a Bond movie that had stakes in it, not, you know, like, not just where, you know, like, yeah, there's always the will the bad guy take over the world stuff.
Right.
But it'd be interesting to see either slightly smaller and more personal stakes, or a still a world-threatening threat, but where it's like, well, if Bond fails here, like, hundreds of people might die.
Well, you know, Skyfall was their attempt to do sort of personal stakes, and it worked fairly well.
Right. Yeah, I guess what I'm thinking of is more like the stakes, the way you feel them in like a sort of more serious, like, you know, Hunt for Red October or
sure,
something,
yeah,
like a Tom Clancy type of movie.
Yeah.
You know, I think you still always want Bond to be larger than life, but it would also be more interesting if, in the moment, if they could capture some of that, what if he could get killed or injured, or
right.
people around him could. So, that sounds interesting.
So, in the Everything About This Headline is Ridiculous news, Ryan Coogler is producing Space Jam 2 for LeBron James. That's all I have to say about that. That's ridiculous, but okay.
It is an unusual use of talent, but every writer, director, at some point reaches a point where they want to either make something for their kids, or they themselves, like, he might have just grown up with Space Jam, and he's just like, well, that, what a fun time that was.
I feel like it's just his name's on it. I mean, it's...
Well, he's producing, right.
And he's giving this person, he's giving LeBron James money to make this.
Right.
So,
sure. I like LeBron James.
Yeah, Space Jam is a fun-ish movie.
I'm not against the Space Jam.
I think
Jam
they've
too.
Said that Michael Jordan may or may not have a cameo.
He should for sure cameo.
Yeah.
Unless they just can't pay whatever he wants.
What if they did an animated version of him and he is translated over into the animated universe?
That'd be cool.
I like that.
They should have him become a cartoon character.
Yeah.
Will this be better or worse than the Looney Tunes movie that they made?
Better, because it'd be hard to be worse.
Is there a Looney Tunes movie?
There is a Looney Tunes back in action.
Yep. Brendan Fraser.
Like, yeah, Brendan Fraser, Jenna Elfman. It's like a bunch. My kid has watched it numerous times. My wife kind of likes it.
See, Nick, this is why I can't fully get behind the Doom Patrol casting of Brendan Fraser.
Understood.
Is because that's in his that's in his history.
Brendan Fraser went. There was a time, like, in the 90s, or I guess, yeah, it had to have been the 90s, where he was doing a lot of family-friendly movies.
Brendan Fraser gotta eat.
Yeah. George of the Jungle gotta eat.
Yeah.
That's true.
They're doing a movie reboot of Child's Play?
Yes.
What's the deal with this?
I think it's just the actors involved.
What if it was grittier? What if it was...
They did release, like, a new, like, look at Chucky. I mean, I have, like... mild interest, but it's the woman from Parks and Rec and Ingrid Goes West. What's her name? Aubrey Plaza. She's gonna play the mom in it, and I forget who's the. There's like two big actors. Aubrey Plaza was one of them, and I can't remember who the other one is.
Just a quick show of hands here. Any fans of the original Child Play series?
I like the first one.
Did you follow many of the others?
No.
I remember watching the first one, and it was okay. It was like, you know, a typical slasher movie with a little more thought to it.
I've seen Bride of Chucky, and I like Jennifer Tilly.
Yep, I also like Jennifer Tilly.
That is the extent of my thoughts on Child's Play.
Let's recast Jennifer Tilly.
Yes.
In the Jennifer Tilly story.
Where is Jennifer Tilly? What happened to her? Is she off playing professional poker now?
She might be. She might have had to...
Oh, it's Brian Tyree Henry from Atlanta.
Oh, well, that's cool. I mean, I feel like it's a waste of his talents, but okay.
You know, the last scary doll movie that was pretty fun was
Boy.
The Boy was good, but also, what was the weird James Wan one? Dead Silence?
Oh,
that was
a
ventriloquist-y kind of thing.
Yeah, that was a ventriloquist-y. Yeah. That was a while back.
Yeah, that was like 10 years or more ago, I think. But anyway, I feel like they could probably remake that as an interesting idea. It is certainly, I think it's a movie that's mainly around to appeal to kind of adult slasher fans and... teenagers who are going to be scared forever of the doll in their closet.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid of the doll in my closet.
Well, it's definitely a good idea because it's sentient and evil.
Yeah. All right, moving on to TV news. CBS All Access put out a trailer that shows that Jordan Peele is going to be the Rod Serling in the new Twilight Zone reboot he's doing.
Right. He does the voiceover. Actually, I think the voiceover in their thing starts with Rod Serling, but at some point it transitions to... maybe the other people who did it in, like, the 80s and stuff.
Yeah.
And then it concludes with... Jordan Peele.
Yeah, and Jordan Peele's going to do the narration, and then, of course, he'll be the guy coming out in a suit to talk to the audience.
All I ask is that, like the earliest ones in the 60s, he's smoking a cigarette. He's vaping.
All I ask is that he reunite with Keegan-Michael Key.
Oh, man.
And he is Rod Serling's anger translator.
All I'm asking is, CBS, why aren't you putting some of your best shows actually on cable network?
See, this is genius. This is genius because this... I mean, Dave and I are not people who pay for streaming. Well, Dave isn't. I try not to pay for the extra streaming services.
Yeah.
But both Dave and I are going to sign up to watch Twilight Zone.
Right. Well, I will sign up because I'll be signed up for Star Trek Discovery. Yeah.
But wouldn't you sign up for just Twilight Zone?
No.
Really?
No. Okay. Unless I heard, here's the thing. Peele's name would almost make me do it, and if it was the word wanted was good, then I would consider it.
I'm expecting this to be pretty good.
Because remind me, though.
Also, Peele, by the way, we're going to come up on a Picard show before too long.
Yeah.
Like, CBS is going to start becoming pretty cool.
At some point, we're all going to have to own CBS All Access. And the reason they're doing their network is they want the money. They want the stream. They see where the future's going.
I guess. They're being very smart, and I don't like them.
But understandably
remind me again. Is Peele, he's creating this?
Yeah. He's like...
Is he showrunning?
Showrunning.
Okay. Yeah. That makes me more interested. I have a fondness for Twilight Zone, but I didn't know that... I guess I'd forgotten that he was involved so heavily, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, damn it. CBS All Access.
All right. Speaking of streaming, DC Streaming is doing a Stargirl series, which we knew about before. They have cast their Stargirl, and it's somebody I have never heard of.
She's from she's from, like...
Brick Bassinger.
Yeah.
She's from Bella and the Bulldogs on Nickelodeon.
Never seen it.
This is kind of like casting somebody who's like one of those Disney actresses.
Yeah. Younger, like, probably, like, the younger people are going to know her. That probably will work out.
She looks kind of dead on for Stargirl.
So even more than, you know, Marvel's got their kind of their movie stuff, their Netflix stuff, and their network TV stuff. And even then, there's still like Runaways and things running around.
Yep.
I guess DC also has like properties all over the place. Yeah. CW stuff, movie stuff, animated stuff. Where's Stargirl gonna... Is it gonna link up to any...
It's gonna be in their DC Universe streaming, but I think it's gonna be separate from everything.
Okay, so not a CW show.
It's gonna
show.
Be on board Titans, Doom Patrol, Swamp Thing, Harley Quinn, Young Justice Outsiders, and a DC talk show, DC Daily, are all on the streaming service.
But
they're
know
not
that,
shared universe, right?
We know that not all of them are. Like, Swamp Thing is not, but I think...
Teen Titans and Doom Patrol are.
Are.
And that may... Stargirl may fit into there like a Lego piece.
I can
don't know.
See it. The weird thing is Stargirl is most associated with JSA, which would make her a decent fit for, like... They've done JSA stuff in, like, Legends of Tomorrow, right?
Yes,
yeah, a little bit.
But I understand that Legends of Tomorrow is kind of a goofy show, and they... This is maybe more going to be more of a solo character vehicle, and they may want to, like... They may not want to associate with show that's... I don't know. Has kind of goofy expectations about it.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know.
We'll see.
Yeah, I'm neither here nor there on it.
I'm more excited that Veronica Mars is getting a revival at Hulu. They're going to put all the old stuff on there in 2019, which leads me to believe that probably... Sometime in 2019 or early 2020, they're going to do the new Veronica Mars stuff.
Yep.
Which is great. They also announced that a lot of the cast is back. Percy Daggs, the guy who plays Eli, I forget who else. They have not confirmed her dad, which is interesting.
Aww,
but I thought he had been confirmed, but apparently he is not.
It's Logan?
Logan, I believe, is confirmed on there, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm excited to see more Veronica Mars.
I mean, I'll watch because she's Kristen Bell is on there.
I love Veronica Mars. I love the movie. I want to see more of it.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting to do something that started as like a teen detective to come back when she's in her 30s.
Yeah.
And because Kristen Bell is so good, yeah, it can
work. And we know Dax Shepard will show up somewhere.
I'm sure. For sure.
Is that her husband?
Yeah.
What, did he show up in the show?
He showed up in the movie.
Yeah, okay. And
he came in the movie.
And he shows up in Good Place.
He shows up in the Good Place. He's a funny guy.
He is.
I used to think he was kind of a dingus, but he's clearly a good guy. And
I mean, he's probably part dingus. I mean,
he seems like a decent guy, and he seems kind of funny. And he was the lead. He was in Idiocracy as well.
Yep. I've listened to a straight up podcast where he interviews people. And he's very interesting.
Yeah.
Very well spoken. And
I thought he was kind of a dude bro, but he's got more to him.
Yeah, he definitely does.
More of a bro dude.
More of a bro dude. Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross have been announced to score Watchmen at HBO, which that's the team that did Social Network, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Gone Girl, and Patriot's Day.
Yep. And also, way back when, you know, Trent Reznor, like, oversaw the soundtrack to Natural Born Killers, which was one of the great soundtracks of the 90s.
The sound, I mean, weird to say, but the soundtrack for Social Network, I mean, the work they did is amazing.
It's really good.
Yep. I feel like they're kind of hit that sort of edgy, paranoid tone that he's pretty good at.
Probably going to fit very well.
It's a good
Watchmen.
Fit for Watchmen. Yeah, honestly, that kind of made me more interested than, not more interested than anything before, because I was already kind of on board and interested in it. But that's a pretty good get for as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. So this is filming now. It's going to hit next year.
Yeah.
Is that?
Next year's going to be a good year for TV.
It's too much TV right now, Randy. Too much.
I know. I'm trying to watch like 8 Netflix series this week. All right. We have a few trailers we want to talk about. I've seen only one of them, so I'll let you guys take lead on this. Haunting of Hill House.
Haunting of Hill House. Yeah. I watched it. It's a teaser trailer. I already forgot everything, but it looked good. No, it looked solidly interesting.
Well, this is sort of a remake of the old movie The Haunting.
Right, which was based on the Shirley Jackson story, yeah. Which is called The Haunting of Hill House?
Yes.
I think.
And I feel like this is a more faithful adaptation of the actual story than
probably.
The
Do you
the
think, I guess
production.
I was assuming that it was actually going to kind of expand and be its own thing.
Maybe. I mean.
Do you remember, like, so I think somewhat to the dismay of some of my horror film friends, I'm not a big fan of The Haunting. It's like one of those beloved movies, and like
the original,
I know it's
right?
Yeah, I know it's place.
Not the '90s one, which is a piece.
Yeah,
of shit.
Yeah, everybody knows the '90s one is a piece of shit with CG little cherubs that turn and look
I'm
at
sorry,
you.
I'm sorry, Liam Neeson, you made a crap movie.
Liam Neeson and Owen Wilson, or Luke Wilson,
and Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Those people should not be in a movie together. That was mud. But yes, the original one in the '60s. It's one of the most respected horror movies that there is.
Yeah.
But I felt every time I watch it, I think like some people watching Citizen Kane. I'm like, right, I know this is important, but I don't get scared watching it. I'm not super into the characters. Like, it didn't hook me on any particular level. Not that it's, but I mean, I think it was bad. I just wasn't never quite felt it.
Yeah.
So I like even like the basic plot stuff is a little bit loose in my head. I guess I assumed this was going to expand on it in a big way, though,
yeah,
and would not be a faithful...
Maybe I'm lying. It's possible.
They're returning to the house, right? As adults, that something happened as like when they were younger?
Yes. It definitely looks like a family lived in a house and was sort of tortured by whatever is there.
Malevolence.
And that sort of echoes out into their life as they've moved on. And I know the mom is played by Carla Gugino, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
She looks great in it. And I'm blanking on any of the rest of the cast, but...
you know, Carla Gugino was just in a good horror movie, Gerald's Game, on Netflix.
She was.
It was really more suspense than straight horror, but...
There were horror elements.
There were horror elements, and at least one scene, I know you know what I'm talking about, Nick, that made me wince, like,
yep.
Almost like no other scene in a movie in like, a decade.
Welcome to Stephen King.
Yes.
All right, you guys also put the trailer for Slice... Which I saw our friends John and Amanda talking about. I know nothing about this.
I put it on there. I didn't know much about it, but I was looking through trailers and found it. It's sort of like a B-level horror movie about a pizza place that is the gateway to hell. And there's
sure.
Werewolves and things like that. It feels very much kind of Hot Fuzz, like on the level of Hot Fuzz.
Okay. An Edgar Wright kind of.
But it has Zazie Beetz and
okay.
A few other people that you would know.
You have my attention.
It looks
there's also,
fun.
I want to say, like a touch of Evil Dead
yes.
In there or you know,
I'm all
Army of Darkness, whichever you want.
I'm all for like schlock horror at times.
Yep.
And this feels like very much into that Sam Raimi Evil Dead.
Yep. But I also think it's like got a, like a little bit of a foot in like, you know, your the Buffy of the world
yeah.
And stuff too, but probably a little bit more on that kind of slightly messed up
weird
side.
Because I believe like pizza delivery men and women are being killed,
uh-huh.
And of course several of them bond together to find out what the hell's going on. I don't know. It just had one of those catchy trailers that I thought was instantly
I thought the trailer was pretty good, too. I don't normally do much with the horror-humor mix, with some exceptions.
Yeah.
I just said it a minute ago, Sam Raimi's thing.
Oh, Drag Me to Hell? Or?
Well, what's his famous one?
Oh, Evil Dead.
Evil Dead. I could only think of Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
Right, I liked Evil Dead, but I'm not one of those, like, Evil Dead changed my life people. I liked it most when I was in my teens, and I think that is the spot
yeah.
That it best deserves one's attention. But I don't think I'll probably be particularly interested in this one, but it looked good though. Like yeah. if some you know
I will
if somebody else was watching it and they said, "Dave, come look at this," I might look at it.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure Mandy will watch this.
Maybe. I don't think she watched the Evil Dead TV show.
Oh, she missed out. It's a good TV show.
All right. Finally, we have the new Doctor Who trailer.
And I did not watch this.
I did not watch this. Randy, did you watch this?
Why did you guys post about it?
Edit this segment out.
I don't think I did.
All right. I did watch it, but we'll talk about it next week. All right. stay tuned in a second, and we will come talk about comics for the week. One familiar cry. We're talking Comics for the Week of Wednesday, September 26th. And usually it's the first week that's super big. This September, it was the final week that was super big.
Yes.
There's a ton of comics this week.
And a lot of hugely notable ones.
Yeah, and we didn't get a chance to read everything. So you're going to hear all of us say I wanted to read this when we're talking about other stuff. But we read enough stuff that we're all able to find picks pretty easily.
Yeah, yep. But assume that there's at least twice as many great comics that you will like on the shelf. And you should browse the shelf.
For sure. Dave, why don't you start with the book, which I think would be all of our picks.
It's true.
And a book that I didn't think would have been on mine. This is Spider-Geddon, number 0. This is the start to the big Spider-Verse crossover stuff.
Yeah, it's sort of a prologue to it.
And they've been running Edge of Spider-Geddon for the last few weeks that had, all the other characters being pulled in.
In fact, that wraps up this week.
And it wraps up this week. This one is notable and kicks off the new one because this brings in the Spider-Man of the recent Spider-Man game for PlayStation 4 and soon for other stuff, but right now just PS4.
Yeah. One of the best-selling games ever made for PS4. Yep.
Now, ironically, I'm the only person here who has not played this game.
Yes, you've just seen all the stuff.
Which actually made it interesting to read the comic without knowing that, because I was like, will it function as its own? The answer is yes. The answer is an enthusiastic yes. In fact, it reminded me of when... I did play the Injustice games, but... When I read the Injustice comics maybe a year or so into them coming out, it was only because one of our former staffers was saying it was really good that I read it, and I was oh, holy shit, this is actually really good.
Yep.
And this is actually a really good Spider-Man comic. I like this Spider-Man comic better than the regular Spider-Man comic now.
No, it's a great it feels like the Dan Slott Spidey, which makes sense because Christos Gage, who wrote this, wrote a ton of the Dan Slott Spidey stuff.
And at the same time, I've heard y'all talk about this, and it was interesting to pick up on some of the things going on, the world building that happened from the video game that I've heard y'all talk about in some cases, but haven't actually played. Yep. So J. Jonah Jameson is kind of crazy right-wing talk radio guy.
And he makes a Swarm reference.
Oh, man, yeah. The famous Nazi made of bees.
Yep.
Mary Jane is working at the Daily Bugle and also kind of acting as support for him.
Yep.
It happens in this, and I can see already why people like her in that role. The Spider-Man villain, the Tarantula, shows up, the sort of Latin assassin from created in the 70s, I think, and weirdly one of the first villains that I read as a kid. And they played him pretty dangerously serious in those early comics where he had these poison tipped barbs on his shoes and his hands. And, if he were to kick Spider-Man, it's he might just die.
Yep.
So, in this one, he's got, more of an exoskeleton suit. That also looks a little like the Iron Spider costume, but, repurposed for villainy.
It's a great take.
But they did him in, an interesting and serious way. He's a real threat in it. Is he in the game at all?
No, but here's the thing. It feels like of a piece of the villains. I could have seen this being a video game sequence.
Well, what I was going to say is, because Clayton Crane is on the artwork in this, and he does a lot of painted stuff in a style that I don't think any of us love. It's this kind of a slightly airbrushy look, but it's hyper detailed. He's done a lot of stuff with Venom, and I forget what all else, but it seems
Spider-Man Rain.
Spider-Man Rain?
Didn't he do Spider-Man Rain?
No, that's Kerry Andrews.
Oh, Kerry Andrews. Sorry. Yeah.
But anyway, he does this kind of detailed style that is actually fitting for a video game style.
This is the best art I've ever seen from Clayton Crane.
And like you say, he looks like he could be another boss enemy or something in the game.
Dave, you have a different perspective on this because you're coming in this without the video game. I am the biggest fan of the video game there is. I love that game. And
so, did you know like what actual attack Spider-Man
I
is doing?
I love that. Yeah, like he uses a couple. He uses his web bomb.
Yep.
And he tries to use his electric web. And like,
is the web bomb one of those things where you buy it as a move and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I like, suspect as much. Well, what's kind of cool though is like it didn't. I'm reading this and I'm not thinking, oh, this is kind of like has cheesy video game tropes. It felt more like when Spider-Man just like there are times when he's kind of got a few more gadgety things he's trying out.
It feels like
the Lost Mission,
which felt like the Dan Slott comics, which makes sense. And so, if you're one of the people who maybe Amazing Spider-Man by Spencer is a little bit too goofy or not has enough stakes, this feels like where Dan Slott and Chris Luskidge would have gone.
Yep. Yeah, you should for sure check it out. You
can spoil who he teams up with.
Okay, yeah, he teams up with the person who... Has he been recruiting all of the other people?
No, this is the first time we've seen him.
Oh, okay. So Superior Spider-Man shows up. That is to say the Dr. Octopus one.
Yep.
And as you might guess, for those of you who played the game, Otto Octavius is a character that he has... that the Spider-Man of the game has a serious history and an emotional history with, and those things all come up, and it's interesting, and there's some actually like really good writing in here that has the characters kind of talking about some serious stuff, and at the same time, there's some hilarious stuff like the Superior Spider-Man being annoyed at his quipping, and he's like, in all these endless old multiverses, you'd think there would be a Spider-Man who doesn't think he's a stand-up comedian, but nope, you all do. And his frustration is very entertaining.
It made me realize how much I really enjoyed Superior Spider-Man.
It was really good.
Also, they make use of like Miles is referenced in here.
Yep.
The other thing is, and it's interesting for you, for me, Dave, is that there's a couple things in here that make reference to the game in a way that makes this almost a direct sequel.
Yeah, very much.
And yet, it didn't feel like it spoiled a ton of stuff. Like, I feel like you could still go to the game pretty cold.
Right, right. Yeah, a few things, and I'll kind of know a little bit more about the world building and MJ's role and stuff like that, but nothing where I was like, I felt like I got big plot points. Anyway, yeah, I don't want to say too much more than that, other than to say that, like, every page seemed to have something I enjoyed on it. The art was good throughout. And I'm like super hyped to see where it's going next. Even the last page was really good.
And did you read the backup story?
I don't think I've read the backup story.
And the backup is sort of explaining what makes it Spider-Geddon. And in addition to it being a recruiting of a character into this multiversal Spider-Man force, this checks in on the Spider-Man like wherever that place that they have the web or whatever it is, where they've been kind of keeping an eye on the post-apocalyptic dimension where they trapped all the inheritors.
Yep.
Yeah. And they're looking in on them, and it's sort of hinting at how they're going to get back out.
But we also see our glimpse at some of the other Spider-Men that we got.
The Captain Britain Spider-Man.
Yeah, Mayday Parker.
Yep.
The Indian Spider-Man. It's all really cool to see those guys again.
Yeah, this was... whether you like the big events or not, like whether you like Spider-Verse or not, first of all, Spider-Verse is great. But
it's one of those big events.
I never thought I would be into it, but Spider-Verse is an amazing concept that is executed extremely well.
And the thing is, Spider-Geddon number zero at least works on the level of whether you want that big crossover or you just want more of the Spider-Man from the video game.
Yeah.
This is a great Spidey story.
I agree. What else we got, y'all?
So my pick is Rolled and Told number one.
That's rolled like rolled dice.
Yep, and told like...
T-O-L-D.
T-O-L-D. Not like you've been told driving through a toll road.
Yes.
This is Lion Forge's new sort of gaming magazine comic. They did a free issue that had an adventure in it that I really, really loved. Now that I see the full thing, this is the Dragon magazine that I've wanted. This is, it's $8, but it's a big, thick volume. It's got two full adventures. The main adventure is about a tribe of goblins commandeering a gnomish airship, and the PCs having to team up with these wacky inventor gnomes to get it back.
Yep.
It opens with a cow falling out of the sky as the goblins have dropped on the PCs. There's a comic strip in the middle that sort of shows them being recruited. Then there is an article called Class-Centric Adventures, which is their adventure craft. It's basically here's how you make sure all the different characters get here's what the cleric gets, here's what the thief gets, so how to get all the players involved.
That's cool.
There are pre-made characters that you can play. There is the house rules, the critical care unit, which, by the way, they misspelled critical. That's an unfortunate typo. But it's basically about talking about how using critical hits and critical misses and stuff like that. Then there are tables for random booty charts for if you're having pirate-themed art objects and minor treasures.
Uh-huh.
And then there's another adventure called Pull Your Weight, where it's... adventurers working alongside people on another airship. So basically, you get two full adventures, pre-registered characters, two gaming articles, and a bunch of art. This is a fantastic gaming magazine. I don't need more content for my game, but I'm probably going to wind up picking all of these up.
Yep.
So I would imagine
the Goblin one that they mentioned at the beginning, it didn't seem like it'd be a long adventure. Like, it could be one night or maybe two nights or something. Yeah. So it'd be an easy one to drop in, too. Yep. Like, you know, just want to run one for some friends or have some fun.
Yep. And in fact, the nice thing, when they start out, they talk about it's designed for a group of 4 or 5 second or third level characters, but you can easily modify it to 4th and 5th level by making all the Goblin Whelps regular Goblins, 9+2 skill challenges, and then for even higher levels, turn them all to this. Basically, they have ways to tune it for higher adventures, too.
Nice.
So, yeah, there's... It's a good little adventure. So, I definitely recommend this. It's not exactly a comics pick. It's more of a gaming pick, but man, was it good.
Yep, and there's comics in it. So, it gets by on technicality.
Nick?
I'm picking Heroes in Crisis #1. You know, this is a shocker because of my love of all things Tom King.
But it's also... But this is a pretty notable project. This is going to be... I don't think it's going to be a major crossover in the sense of, like, DC's usual crises.
No.
But it is going to be one of their most notable stories of the year.
And it's Tom King, where he does more focused, like, 1 and 2 character pieces. Yeah. I mean, Mr. Miracle definitely has all of, like, the New Gods and stuff. But this is definitely him broadening to encompass all of the DC universe.
Yes. And although that said, it still focuses on, like, the sort of the Trinity of Heroes and a few other characters.
Yeah. And it is a murder mystery. Basically, it opens up with
Well, you know, I'd almost say the murder mystery in the first issue takes slightly a backdrop to the character stuff and the confrontation between those two characters.
It opens up in a diner and a conversation between Booster Gold and Harley Quinn.
You know, just sitting down for some pie and coffee.
And sort of, peach pie. And
possibly a violent altercation.
Well, you know, and with all comics, you have to have a little bit of violence, I guess. It kind of goes from there, and dealing what has actually occurred at Sanctuary, which is the place Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman has sort of created for heroes who are enduring certain crises in their life to go
it's
and
almost
sort
like
of,
a,
it's a safe haven.
Yeah, but it seems like in some ways it's, you know, the equivalent of like sort of like a mental hospital.
Yeah.
Or almost like therapy place. They don't just roll it out too quickly. Like, it slowly kind of is revealed about it.
And, I mean, I don't want to reveal too much because there's a lot that happens in here, like, tangentially, and there are deaths.
Yep.
Pretty
big things happen in the first issue. But I feel like probably, like, the character moments are almost maybe the bigger takeaway.
Yeah.
Whether it's kind of the way the Trinity interacts with each other,
yep.
As they kind of are doing their investigation, and they're handling it pretty somberly and seriously. And then there's also some pretty serious character beats between Harley Quinn and Booster Gold.
Yeah, honestly, this is the first time I've ever seen Tom King write Harley Quinn, mm-hmm. and it is a very interesting take with her, because she's a little more manic than I'm used to seeing her.
Right. Like, you feel like she could... you could flip a switch and you could end up killed her or something
well,
like that.
Well, she feels almost as more as lethal as Joker.
Right.
And I guess I never kind of view her in that light in a lot of ways.
Right. But she's also supposed to be clearly kind of been pushed to the edge.
Yeah. I think one of the bigger stars of the book, however, is Clay Mann, who does the art in here. And as he has done in previous issues of Batman, it's beautiful. I mean, it takes all sort of the talking points that you might get in a Bendis book, and like all of Bendis's writer or artists, makes it just look so.
Talking about
damn
that, yeah,
good.
Sort of the conversational stuff.
Yeah, it's not boring. It's
right.
kind of like just a
well,
lot
you know,
for your eyes
Tom
to
King
take
does
in.
Intersperse it with there's like there are a few big action sequences.
Yep.
And there's big stuff going on with Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman as they are investigating something, and they, you know, it is... do not skimp on creating that superhero feel to it.
Yeah. So, I feel like if you like Tom King, or if you maybe have a fondness for Booster Gold or Harley Quinn, or just want to get it on the...
I was going to say, also, like, if you are interested when they kind of get, like, King or any superhero or anybody gets a little bit psychological with heroes.
Yeah, it's true. They actually, like, hired a psychiatrist to do write-ups for the Trinity on what sort of, like, in the normal world, what would
what
those...
What psychoses or whatever they would be dealing with. What
were they dealing with the things that have happened to them in their lives, which I thought was a little crazy, but also kind of fun. My backup...
I mean, we'll see how it's used, of course.
Yeah, of course. My backup pick is another big one from DC. Man, I'm a DC whore this week. It's fun. is Doomsday Clock number 7. And honestly, I feel like all the previous issues, while very good and interesting, it's sort of building up to this issue.
If nothing else, this issue had people talking because it showed Rorschach beaten down on the Joker on one of the covers.
There is that. But I think the bigger thing for me was that a lot of it is told from the perspective of Dr. Manhattan. So we get sort of this...
Dr. Manhattan, who's been the crux we know of, like...
Of all of Rebirth.
All of Rebirth and retroactively New 52.
Yep.
And I guess in some ways it was sort of like, if you didn't like it in New 52, it was because Dr. Manhattan was stirring the pot in some weird way.
Exactly. And while we don't get, like, outright reasons why... John did those things. You can elude them. He definitely mentions things, and you're like, oh. And there's cool stuff with why Ozymandias cloned Bubastis. There's Alan Scott's Lantern involved.
Was it because Bubastis is so darn cute?
No, it's actually an interesting callback to Watchmen. Like, Bubastis was connected to John when he killed when Ozymandias fried.
Yeah,
that's true. So, they were both walking through that. Thing.
Yeah.
That device.
Geoff Johns' Ozymandias is decidedly, like, not evil, but he is like a cold, calculating son of a bitch.
Kind which of guy I guess who would murder a city.
Murder an entire city.
I know, but I don't know. I felt like it's a little bit bigger here. I mean, not to say bigger, but.
In a way that, like, Alan Moore sort of does drama, and Geoff Johns does melodrama.
Yeah.
And so I could see he might have turned it up a little bit.
Yeah,
but I haven't read this, so I don't have the context.
There's also some personal, like, turning the screws with his relationship with the new Rorschach. I don't know. Batman's involved in here. Joker's involved. There is a lot going on here, and there's a kind of tease at the end, which is pretty exciting, actually. So I think it was a great... issue.
Dave, what's your backup?
My backup pick is the first issue of, I guess this is a new miniseries, Randy?
I think Valiant's doing a lot of series and miniseries.
Okay. So, we've talked about the character Faith before.
I think we'd all sort of dropped out of it a little bit.
I just haven't kept up close
with it.
First
I was not familiar with.
Yeah, but I actually really liked how they kind of caught me up on
it.
Yeah,
me too.
So, Faith Herbert is the character. Is it like her core power is flying, but she can...
She has some telekinetic powers.
She has like some telekinetic powers too. She's like a young superhero who... In a world that doesn't have a lot of superheroes. It's like she grew up reading superheroes.
She's the geek girl.
And imprinted on that. Yeah, she's a geek girl. She's a fan girl. And she works at like sort of a place that's like a BuzzFeed type of place. Yeah. But when I catch up with her in this, it is clear her secret identity has been outed. Zephyr, her superhero incarnation, has been framed.
Yes.
By some bad guys who did it in such a way that generally the public believes them.
Right.
And so she's still working there, but her life is a little bit in shambles. Oh man, this art is so nice.
Yeah, the art's great. We don't know, MJ Kim, I think is the name, and it's Jordi Belair on colors, and Jordi Belair is one of the best colorists in the business.
You know what's funny is, like, the art, like, some of the facial expressions remind me of the slightly anime or manga look that, like, say, James Stokoe does for his characters. It's not that it's the overall look, like, I would almost never think to say this looks at all like manga, but it actually, it's really good artwork. It's actually kind of detailed, realistic art, but there's just a hint of manga influence, I'm going to say.
But anyway, yeah, she's been framed for murder, and now so the cops are after her, but she still has to be a hero.
Yeah, and it was kind of nice to see, like, this character who, clearly in a somewhat more real-world setting, where she's, like, having to lay low, is going to go ahead and make that decision to, like, when something's going down, to put on the costume again and do what she needs to do. Only, also in the real world, because this Valiant leans more realistic, she saves some people, and then she gets stopped by the cops, and she kind of talks it through, like, in her head, she walks through, she's like, she doesn't want to get in a fight with them because there's innocents behind her who could get shot. She doesn't want to just start fighting with police, so she turns herself in.
Yeah.
That is not the end of the issue. some other stuff happens, and, in fact, she ends up kind of talking to another character who, without saying quite how things play out with the cops, but somebody else is turning to her for help, and it looks like it's a situation that she might have to leave custody to deal with. The interesting thing about this character is she's just like 15 or so.
Yeah.
But it seems like she's like kind
she's
of
older than that now.
She said she was 15. Does somewhere
she? I thought
there.
She was older than that now. She has a job and everything, so I thought she was in her 20s.
Okay, I don't know.
No, the other characters. You're talking about Animalia, not Faith.
Yes.
Okay, sorry, I misunderstood.
Oh yeah. Yeah, no, Animalia, the girl who brings her in, is somebody else who's been involved in some stuff, and she's seen some stuff, more than Faith has, but they also have similar frames of reference. But I did think it was interesting, at one point they're at Faith's apartment or house, and she's kind of looking at all of Faith's nerdy stuff, and she's like, why do you have so much kiddie stuff here? Yeah. And it's interesting, Faith's not embarrassed about it, like, that's her life, but she kind of, it was interesting to have a younger character who's not like, oh, this is amazing, she's like... It's kind of nerdy, because it sounds like this other character has maybe seen some worse stuff than Faith has.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to see where things are going to go. There's also a third character who's brought in who that may or may not to help Faith out.
Because there's going to be some mystical stuff here.
There's going to be some mystical stuff, and I'm just going to say who it is, because it was right there in the solicits and stuff. Dr. Mirage.
Yep.
I don't know anything about Dr. Mirage. I'm going to find out about her through the course of this. But I'm kind of already hyped about it.
You know what these are like about Valiant? I read all the Valiant stuff, and I know all these characters, and so I see some of the interconnections and stuff.
Yep.
But I think you can also pick it up in the way that you do, Dave, like when something catches your eye,
yeah.
Jump in, and they do a good job. It's like old school Marvel or DC. Like, it feels like a lived-in world.
In a weird way, I actually think they're handling it, say... Well, yes, more like old school Marvel DC and better than they do now. Like, I could, like, hand somebody a random issue of some Marvel comic now, and there's a lot of stuff that they'll take for granted that you understand and know, and it can be a little bit alienating. It's not like there's, like, tons of exposition or anything like that. I just think they're just kind of better at catching you up on what you need to know.
I think it's the benefit of being self-aware that not everybody's reading every comic you make.
Yeah, it's maybe a decent reason to... A virtue of the minor leagues, in a way.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's called Faith Dreamside, if I didn't straight up say the name, and it's just the first issue of it.
Yeah, it was really good. I was very pleased with that as well. My backup pick is Domino Annual Number 1. I still can't believe
Jeez, Randy, stop with the annuals.
I can't believe how much I'm loving annuals. Oh my god, it's another annual. And how much I'm loving Gail Simone's Domino. Because Gail Simone is hit or miss for me. I love her, but I don't always love her writing.
Right.
But... She's doing something with Domino. It wasn't until I read this annual, which has a bunch of other writers on it, that I realized how much of this is a girl power book. And it is... So the opening story is sort of the origin of how Domino met Diamondback and Outlaw and formed the crew, which has become the status quo of Gail's Domino book, and a status quo I really love because Diamondback's a character I love and didn't ever expect to see this prominent again. But... There's some really fun stuff. There's a good bad guy. It's got some nice action. And that's one story. Then Fabian Nicieza, who famously did the early Cable... He did the early Cable and Deadpool and Domino stuff. Goes back and does like a flashback to when Cable and Domino were like having an affair and does a Cable story wrapped around sort of her relationship with his relationship with Domino. And then there's another story that has Domino... basically getting involved in a caper where she winds up meeting up with Colossus, who was someone she dated for a little while. And then there's another story where there's a support group for mutants who look different.
Huh.
And it's a really good little story. Basically, there's four different stories, different tones. They're all about Domino and different aspects of her personality. They're all about different aspects of being a mutant. And it's really good. I recommend this.
I wonder if... these have all been Marvel annuals you've been liking, right?
Yep.
I wonder if there was like a concerted effort to retool their annual program. Not something that they would, of course, talk about publicly. Like, we're going to try and make them good now for once.
Yeah.
But maybe there was something of a more thought put into it. Because, it seems like they've been coming up winners.
Yep. All right. Also on my list this week, Maneaters number 1, Chelsea Kane and Kate Nimzik's new book.
Sure.
That is about... teenage girls turning into cats and murdering people.
I believe when they have their period.
Yes,
right. That's just built into the concept.
It is an outright sort of feminist book in the same way Bitch Planet is. It's very strange. I found it really compelling. I'm curious to see where it goes.
I was going to say, it is extremely strange, but it reads really well. And I loved the first issue.
And the art's really good, and it's funny. Yeah. Amazing Spider-Man number 6. While I'm still not, like, super in love with Spencer's Amazing Spider-Man, it is kind of fun. And if you're a fan of Spear of Foes, that is basically what he's doing here.
Yep.
X-Men Red number 8 continues the battle between Jean Grey and Cassandra Cain. It's like a big war where they're using different people against each other. It's really
Cassandra
fantastic
Nova,
stuff.
Right?
What did I say?
He said Cassandra Cain, which is a
Cassandra Nova.
Yeah.
Cain okay, is I was like
Cassandra Nova.
Yes.
There's only one Cassandra in comics. They're all the same. Strange Things number 1 is a look at what was happening with Will when he was in the Upside Down. It is a good companion piece to the miniseries, and if you're a Stranger Things fan, you're going to want that. Edge of Spider-Gwen number 4 introduces a Spider-Man who is Norman Osborn, and does some interesting things there. I have not had a chance to read, but Punisher number 2 is out this week. Marvel 2-in-1 Thing Human Torch number 10 is out this week. Venom First Host concludes this week. Beasts of Burden, Wise Dogs, and Eldritch Man is this week. And Cullen Bunn's Ghost Story Cold Spots is this week. Also, Harbinger Wars 2 gets an aftermath. And if you want to sort of look at the status quo of Valiant, it's a good one, because it's a checks in on X-Men Manowar, checks in on Livewire, checks in on Ninjak, sort of some of their big characters, checks in on Bloodshot, and it's sort of a nice both aftermath for their big crossover and a teaser for where things are going next, and it's a good way to check in on the Valiant universe. Dave, what else is on your stack?
Let's see, I only have one or two that I was going to mention. One is the slightly delayed second issue, maybe, of Batman Kings of Fear.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't actually have a chance to read this week, but I was flipping through it, and I just wanted to mention, like, Kelly Jones is like, killing it on the art here. He's also getting to draw a lot of the iconic Arkham villains.
Does he still draw giant-eared Batman?
Giant-eared Batman. Everybody's got, like, these, like, giant rib cages and exaggerated muscles and stuff like that.
Okay,
but,
so Kelly Jones is still drawing like Kelly Jones.
But also, like, if you take a look at, like, the backgrounds and stuff on here,
oh, wow.
He's, like, doing really elaborate backgrounds that have these kind
of... reminds me of, like, Bernie Wrightson and stuff.
Well, Bernie Wrightson's, like, one of his key influences.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's doing, like, more work. I mean, like, check out this panel and how, like, dramatic
wow.
and the lighting is on that and the way the cape swoops around to give him kind of this extra momentum.
Just the environments in general are really intricate and...
Yeah, it's, like, super intricate. I've always kind of... Like, I like how he draws characters. It's weird but cool. But it's honestly the backgrounds almost as much as anything in this that are kind of grabbing me. And then, Randy, did you mention... There's a IDW has put out the Star Trek versus Transformers comic. This is the one that takes the 70s Star Trek cartoon where they had the voices of most of the cast, but they had to replace a few of them with weird alien people. And then there's the Transformers of the 80s. So that kind of visually a similar clean line cartoony fit. And it was actually like, once again, IDW is coming through with the Star Trek license. It's another good one. Gets to the action fast. You will see Kirk talk to Optimus Prime in this, you know. You will see Dr. McCoy say that he's a doctor, not a mechanic, when he's asked to repair an Autobot.
So it's like the whole deal is like they come across like a Cybertronian ship, or do they visit Cybertron?
They're checking out this area of space that's been getting attacked by Klingons. And they see, when they arrive, there's kind of a mystery as to what's going on, but they see all these Decepticon ships attacking this outpost, and they kind of jump in to help, and there's like, you know, like the Enterprise is like firing photon torpedoes at Decepticons and stuff
awesome,
like that.
Actually.
Yeah. And this is all, of course, the Generation 1 Transformers looking very exactly the way they did on the animated series for anybody who grew up with the G1 Transformers stuff. And all convincingly written, you know, they feel like their cartoon self, slightly larger than life version of Star Trek, and the Transformers are all dead on.
It was way more fun than I thought.
And meanwhile,
of
course, the Klingons are making us packed behind the scenes with the Decepticons.
Yes, it's great.
I also wanted to mention, though I did not read, this latest issue of Batgirl features the new costume designed by that guy?
Sean Murphy.
Sean Murphy, yeah, right.
Yeah, sure,
right.
Okay. I second guess myself.
Is that that's the Batman White Knight?
Yes.
Which is harkens back to her kind of her classic costume, but sort of without the cowl in a way, or with a kind of simplified version of that, so that the red hair can flow free. Anyway, the it's always notable when somebody gets a new costume. Red Hood got one the other day. Batgirl gets one this week.
Yep.
Just a few more on my pile. Rick and Morty versus Dungeons and Dragons number 2 hits. I haven't read it yet, but Summer gets involved in the insanity and becomes a ranger, which just sounds kind of awesome. Infinity Warp's Iron Hammer number 1, which is the second basically smooshing of characters.
Yep.
This time Thor and Iron Man. And writer Al Ewing gets to have a lot of fun building those two characters a new history. And we see a bunch of other smashed up characters involved. But it's a lot of fun retelling Tony Stark's history with Thor stuff mapped on.
And his drunken mead history.
Yes. there's also Extermination number 3, which continues the... What is going on with the young X-Men, and why does Ahab want to kill them, and young Cable want to capture them, kidnap them? This is a lot of crazy violence, but lots of fun, especially with the reformation of the old 90s X-Force squad.
I feel like this book is written for Cliff Coates somehow.
Yes, entirely.
In fact, there's a big cannonball moment.
There is a big cannonball moment. There's also a reference to the Domino... What's I mentioned in the Domino Annual, the bathtub. There's a reference in that that Boom Boom makes, yeah. And it's hilarious.
Yeah, well, because the Domino Annual is also a reference back to the original story.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And then, last but not least, there is a hardcover collection of the wonderful Klaus. Klaus.
As everyone else calls it, Klaus.
Klaus, yeah. miniseries by... Grant Morrison and artist Dan Mora.
His Santa Claus... Well, originally Santa Claus Year One, but Santa Claus as superhero, as adventurer.
Yeah, this is sort of him fighting against, like, a small town that is forever trapped in, like, Christmas... Is it, like, Christmas Town?
It's been a while since I've read these stories. This is several specials put together, right?
I believe so.
Because, you know, he did the main miniseries, and then he did... Was there a follow-up miniseries, or was it a series of one-shots?
The series of one-shots that are collected here, yeah.
Okay, yeah. But they've all been good. Well, you know, what he wanted to do was imagine sort of Santa as superhero, and one of the kind of fun things he does is in the various adventures in this, he'll have Santa casually mention, you know, like, previous adventures, and it'll feel as if there have been these Adventures of Santa Claus comics for decades or whatever, because he's talking about all these past adventures, and it's all, of course, filtered through the crazy mind of Grant Morrison and the awesome art skills of Dan Mora.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's Santa Claus and his giant snow wolf, which I forget its name, but...
But we'll call Snow Wolf.
Snow Wolf. but really, it's a great series.
Yeah, there's two hardcovers out. Get it along with the other one as the perfect Christmas gift for
the comic
lover. I was
going to say, start getting the Christmas mood now.
Yep.
I forgot to mention two other books that graphic novels. Open Earth, which is the new graphic novel from Limerence. Which is Oni's sort of adult line. Previously, they've done Oh Joy Sex Toy and Small Favors and the Guide to They, Them Pronouns. Most of that's been reprints. This is the first one that's, like, original to Limerence, I believe, and is about a polyamorous relationships and queer relationships on board a space station on what used to be California. It looks interesting. I've not had a chance to read it yet at all, but I'm curious about it. And then Amulet Volume 8 continues the... sort of Miyazaki-esque story that Kazuo Kibushi has been doing for a while now. It's always a beautiful book. I'm always glad to see another volume of it.
I'm going
to
quick add one other thing that I was just... I remembered about Batgirl, which is the new costume. I think a company... I believe she's leaving these, like, Burnside area
she's
of Gotham.
Going back to Gotham.
Yeah, going to Gotham specifically. So I guess that's sort of broadening her territory out there from kind of, like, more provincial to a kind of all of Gotham again.
She's shipping up to Gotham?
Yep.
All right, that wraps it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo-Jo!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.